While doing a long overdue overhaul of consoles, I started to look at the Sega Genesis, also known as the Sega Mega Drive, and the 32X. And where we had 945 cartridges emulated at the archive, I figured there might be twice as many more than that. I was way off. It turned out to be about 20,000 other cartridges. But the nature of these cartridges and the larger project this was all part of is worth discussing. Welcome to the world of homebrew. Things have gotten a little bit out of hand. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. When I was first trying to put emulation in the browser in front of a whole new audience, I used consoles primarily. The reasons were legion. Consoles were very standardized. Having one cartridge, it would generally work in any of the consoles it was made for. You wouldn't get surprises about your video card or how you arranged your USB drivers. Also, people understand console games. They're designed from the ground up to be almost self-explanatory. So, back in 2014, I had something called The Second Christmas Morning, where well over 2,000 games came alive for about 8 different console platforms. People loved it. They played it. They enjoyed it. They came back with stories about how they'd play these games as a child. Someone even told me about how he had called his father up about this emulation existing, and he had remembered playing this game on his father's lap. And he came over and was able to play it again with him, just like he had 30 years ago. It got a little bit of press. A few companies were a little bit cranky, but on the whole, the games have survived. You can go to the Internet Archive, look for the console living room, and do what millions have done before you and enjoy these old games. And with that victory in my pocket, I focused towards the much more difficult process of making computer games and computer programs and utilities come alive as well. It was legions more difficult because you had all of those configuration issues, the problems of discovering which machines were compatible with what, and the endless configuring of different emulator setups to reflect what each individual program needed. I had written scripts just to generate those configurations, and after a couple years, things settled down to the point that it was all pretty good looking. I turned my attention to other matters, and mostly what I would do is learn that a new platform had become available, or there were ways to recompile the different emulators to work faster or more dependably with ever-increasing amounts of vintage software. But meanwhile, the console living room ground on. If you were looking for a program from your youth and the company who had made it hadn't sent a letter in, you could enjoy it instantly. But there were gaps, places where just the nature of doing emulation in a browser would make things difficult. There wasn't a way other than by hand to link these different programs with their manuals, to find all of the instruction booklets that were, in some of the early cases, just as important as the programming. If you send a dot going north and it turns blue, and when you send it down, it becomes green, only a manual's going to add that backstory as to what you're looking at. Plus, I'd turned my attention to all sorts of other problems at the archive. Magazines and periodicals, ephemeral cassettes, VHS tapes, and spam. So the game systems didn't seem like they needed much else. Until recently, I decided to do the very thing that somebody who collects sometimes fails to do on a regular basis. I walked the collection. I went in to see how had things changed, what was still working, were there any problems or improvements that after 10 years I could apply some of my knowledge to. The answer, very rapidly, became yes. Revisiting the nearly 20 game systems that the Internet Archive supports, I was finding all sorts of gaps in both the library, the way they were implemented, and basic work of metadata and operation instructions that I could fix. Using scripts I'd written during my time at the archive, I could make much better. There's an entry in the metadata for something called notes, meant to be meta-commentary on whatever you're looking at. Within the Internet Archive's book systems, this is where you would say that pages were missing or there were stains. For the emulated consoles, though, this is where I started putting in instructions on how to play. In almost every case for a MAME-based console emulator, there's a set of keys, some of them obvious, and others, well, no doubt the result of many different arguments as to what would make the most, air quotes, sense of everything. There's prominent use of the control and alt keys. In some cases, you have to use the number keypad, something that does not exist on every keyboard in the modern era. In one case, you have to press a function key almost a dozen times before the game starts to run. In one case, you have to press a function key at least a dozen times before it will start running dependably. All of those different little hints, the difference between staring down a group of dots and being able to play the game, I started focusing on. In doing so, though, I then looked back again at how many of the cartridges, how many of the game units were actually being put up and made available. Take, for example, the Atari 2600, one of the most basic and early game systems, which in its lifetime has had about 2,000 or 3,000 cartridges made, both official and unofficial. But beyond that, it had many, many more thousands of experiments, half-made hacks, reissues and remixes of games that already came out. And beyond that obvious, canonical, Atari-approved or professionally made cartridges was an entire ecosystem of what 40-plus years of tinkering can bring you. So I threw them all on. I made sure none were already up, and in doing so, I gave myself a massive screenshotting nightmare. Luckily, thanks to TrueMad's rewriting of the screenshotter, I was able to have three different systems running at the same time and get through it in a few days. Many of the games don't even have much in the way of a static image unless you press a button, so screenshotting didn't take long, uploading them took even less time. And with a little bit of focus and a little bit of each day for a week, the Atari 2600 collection had a whole new life. I found that inspiring, and I started to focus on the other weird systems, the WonderSwan, the AdventureVision, and many more. Now I'm sitting on top of the Genesis generation, the Sega Genesis, also known as the Mega Drive, with an expansion called the 32X. The Genesis has something very odd about it. It has region encoding and locking. That means that some ROMs won't work if you're using a Mega Drive and not an American Genesis. Similarly, you can have lots of Japanese games that won't work in the US. So even though you might have it working, it's not working. Going into one of the larger collections of Genesis programs, I found over 20,000 ROMs ready to go. But then I find myself not just making sure that nothing old is already being added, but also checking the resulting screenshots to see if that region encoding has to be manipulated. On the archive, there are three different declared emulators: Genesis, Mega Drive, and Mega Drive Japan. Setting the right one is something that really only a human can do. You look at the screenshot indicates you have it in the wrong region, and I have a program which removes the screenshots, sets it to the other region, and then another program will come through and screenshot again. Hopefully, in doing that, I'm spending the least amount of time fiddling. Also, looking over the ROMs, I discovered many of them, in fact the vast majority, are minor modifications to already available cartridges, intentionally adding cheats and modifications, giving you better scores or more lives or something called a trainer, which is where it pulls up a menu at the beginning and you can modify the game you're going to play. These are going to have their own separate directory, so you're not constantly going through 10 minor versions of the same cartridge. And then there's the whole homebrew and public domain collections of the Sega Genesis. With its 16-bit color and the ability to import graphics from other platforms, the Genesis has a real artistic feel about it. If somebody cared, if they took the time, they could make beautiful graphics on this machine. So many of the homebrews and the public domains are beautiful, truly works of art, and they deserve a collection all their own. At the end of the day, though, it's about being the place where all of these works are discovered, where a person who didn't know much about the Genesis, or maybe only played Sonic the Hedgehog once at a store, realizes the full depth of what the Genesis had provided. The Dreamcast, it turns out, is a nightmare to emulate. For whatever reason, the code, chips, and processes have made it very slow on a browser. With tricks and efforts after 10 years, we've gotten it up to anywhere between 20 to 40% of a real speed of a Dreamcast. So that emulation still lives in the fog of the future. The Genesis, though, works very well in our system. You connect to it with a decent speed machine, and you will see full frame scrolling that looks stunning to a person who's used to having to make compromises. So the lessons I'm learning here, so late, have shown me where I stepped right and where I made missteps. Putting it all up in the state that I had it, missing metadata and missing some of the functionality, turned out to be a good move. It got people excited. It made people want to refine. Folks would upload their own works for the Genesis or involve themselves and give reviews to tell you how to play all of these different games. But it also represented the kinds of distractions I can get involved in, where once it's sort of running, I don't keep iterating the fixing, the refining, the modifications, iterating the quality control, trying to make it a little bit better, but instead moving on to the next thing. I wouldn't say that consoles got shortchanged in our emulation. I always made sure that as we got better and better emulation, things would go into the system and be reflected there almost immediately. We had improvements over the years, but improvements are only one level of what needed to be done. They needed the care of a historian, and they needed the completeness of what others had worked on to make these old game cartridges available. And now, almost 8 years after I started that project, that's happening. I'm not trumpeting it. I'm not announcing it. I'm not making a big deal. Occasionally, I see something that really blows me away, and I'll tell people about it. The simple announcement of console emulation, something the archive has had for a very long time, being improved, well, let's just keep it between us and anybody else who we think should be told that this miracle continues. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bequianu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, John Sturm, Eugene, Martin, Sembiance, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The collections are still at Console Living Room at the Internet Archive. Like I said, it gets millions of visitors a year. People just find it or are linked to it. They play the games. They are incredulous at some of the titles. They have happy memories of the games they once played. And my goal in making instantaneous emulation part of the online experience grinds forward in unquestioned success.